A big thanks to Gymnastic Planet for supporting this episode. Gymnastics is a challenging sport, but having the right tools in your gym bag really does help. Gymnastic Planet is a leading manufacturer and distributor of essential training kit. They provide the best quality products, including world-class Spieth equipment, handguards, and chalk. They also specialize in club services like venue design, maintenance, and installation. Backed by decades of experience from competing and coaching to club management, Gymnastic Planet aims to help gymnasts succeed and enjoy their craft. If you'd like to find out more, visit gymnasticplanet.com. In 2021, at the Tokyo Olympic Games, Amalie Morgan made history alongside her teammates, winning the first women's team gymnastics medal in 93 years. She had an outstanding junior career, winning 5 medals at the 2018 Junior European Championships and 3 medals at the Youth Olympic Games. Amalie homeschooled as a teenager in order to maintain her 35-hour-a-week training schedule. Balancing her education alongside her gymnastics eventually led to a full scholarship at the University of Utah in 2021. In the past week, she has announced her retirement from elite gymnastics, and this is her story. How was that, Amalie? Was that right? Was there anything in there that was off a little bit? No?
All good to me.
So thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it, Amalie. Like I was saying just before we went live, you're the second female gymnast to come on the podcast after Ellie Downey. So thank you very much for making the time for us. There's loads I want to talk about. Obviously, topically, you've just literally in the last week announced that you're retiring from elite gymnastics, having come back to the UK to compete in the English Championships and British Championships. Before we get into that, I want to take it back to the start. And can you tell me a little bit about how you got into the sport of gymnastics? Because I think on the men's side in particular, a lot of young boys, you know, it's that classic case of a typical hyperactive boy. Does that seem to be the same with young girls that are getting into gymnastics as well? And was that your story?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, firstly. And yeah, I definitely think it's the same for girls too. I had a twin brother growing up, so maybe it's a sibling thing too.
Okay.
But we would just be so much playing around, fighting in the house. And yeah, I think my parents had enough and they were like, I think it's time for gymnastics. So we were 5 and we went to our first recreational classes, just an hour a week to burn off some energy. And I think by the time we were 7 is when we started to kind of find an actual club that did kind of more structured hours and just progress from there.
And from the get-go, were you and your brother like in the same group when you did that first gymnastics class? Was it you and your brother in the same group?
It's a really funny story because I was actually really bad when I first started gymnastics. Okay. And the club that we went to was a pretty small club. They were just starting out, so they didn't have too many squad groups at that time. So they were kind of, they had boys and girls separate, but most of the time they were kind of doing stuff together and learning the basics kind of thing. And the only reason they took me onto their kind of like development squad was because they wanted him. And I was terrible, but they were like, oh, I guess we have to take them both. So guess I owe it to him that I got onto the little squad at that time.
So it wasn't a case of like something that came to you straight away and you had some kind of like natural ability that led you straight into gymnastics. It was more of something like a love that developed over time.
Definitely. For me, obviously there has to be some talent in the sport, but I definitely think for me, it was something that I had to work at and put a lot of time and effort into. So it definitely isn't just something that comes to you straight away for everyone.
Are you and your brother, are you different types of characters, Amalie? Like personality-wise, are you very different? Are you quite similar?
I think sometimes we can be very similar and sometimes we can be complete opposites. Growing up, we obviously spent a lot of time together in the gym, outside of the gym. And then when I eventually moved away to go to a different gym, we were apart for a lot of our teenage years, which was very strange to us.
Right, okay.
But in a way, we almost like grew closer. And I think we, as we've grown up, we've become more similar.
Right.
So it's pretty cool to see.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's really unique. I know there's quite a lot of sets of twins that have been in gymnastics, particularly in the UK. So I know Courtney Tullock has a twin. Ashley Watson has a twin. Gabby Jupp had a twin. There's quite a few twins. And I think a lot of twins that are in gymnastics, their brother or sister doesn't do the sport. And I always look at that and use that as an example, because when everyone says, oh, gymnastics stunts your growth, typically the twin that doesn't do the sport tends to be quite a lot bigger. So you and your brother both did the sport from a very early age. Do you both have the same natural physical gifts? So are you a similar type of gymnast? And what I mean by that is, you know, for example, does your brother excel on the floor and vault events and you're similar? Or are you both better at the technical events, more like A-bars or high bar? How would you describe both of your, I guess, physical makeups that you came into the sport with, and are they very similar?
I would say there's some similarities, but honestly, I think we're pretty different.
Okay.
I'm definitely more of like a technical event person, like bars and beam is more my strengths as opposed to floor and vault. And I would say I'm not as much of a kind of quick twitch person, whereas he's very quick and fast in like what he does. I would say he's probably more technical events too.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. It's strange. We're very, like, I feel like when you watch us, we look very different when we do gymnastics.
Which, right. Okay.
Yeah.
I could tell straight away from seeing the picture of you and your brother having competed at the British Championships that you have quite a close relationship. I think a lot of brothers and sisters can kind of be at loggerheads, especially when they're growing up. So me trying to understand you both doing the same sport and being in the car and having that car journey home from the gym at the same time, like, it must have been a very unique relationship that you had, but you probably had quite a deep understanding of the position each of you were in and probably a respect for how much work you were putting in, I guess.
Yeah, I think we were able to have that sort of relationship because we're a boy-girl twin. I'm not sure how the dynamic would be different if we were the same, you know, girl-girl, boy-boy, because we understand each other's sports so well, yet we don't have to compete against each other.
Yeah.
So there's not that competitive, like, kind of undertone tension between us. It was kind of like we completely understood each other. We could talk about it, talk about our problems or like our ideas, and we'd completely understand, yet we didn't have to be competing against each other. So I think that's why it worked so well and why we were able to kind of have that relationship.
Yeah, that makes so much sense, I guess, that you understand each other's sport, but you're in completely different lanes trying to do two completely different things. Yeah, amazing. It's just so, I'm just super interested in that relationship. It sounds so cool. Can you tell me a little bit, Amelie, about when you moved on to your next clubs and you started to work up that ladder and eventually you went to the academy, right? And you started homeschooling. That's quite a big decision. Was that a long way away from where home was for you guys at the time? And did your brother go to a completely different gym that was even further away? How did you manage that as a family? Because, you know, it's hard enough for parents to manage one child that's competing in elite sport, but two children that are going to two different gym clubs. That seems like an absolute minefield for parents to try and balance.
Yeah, so it was definitely a big decision to make. At this time, I was 13, and although that seems young to some, I had just won the Junior British Championships. I was only kind of getting better, and I just wasn't in, I needed a different club. I needed to kind of go to a club where there was more experience and more potential to grow. So I made the decision to move, but there was no clubs nearby. So it was a really difficult decision because, you know, at 13, you don't really want to move schools. My brother didn't want to move gym or move schools. Yeah. So we made the decision. He stayed with my dad and I moved with my mom down to Bristol, which is 2.5 hours away, so I could go to the academy. And it was definitely a big adjustment, but I think, you know, our family has always been so supportive and they honestly just want the best for us and it just worked. I mean, it's definitely a big commitment, but we made it work and put effort in to communicate and
What's your parents' background, Amelie? Because that is a huge decision to kind of split the kids up and the parents up. Like, do they have a sporting background? Do they come from a sporting background? Or was that completely alien to them?
So my parents actually aren't together anymore.
Okay,
so
right.
Maybe that was part of the decision why it worked a little bit better. Obviously, that's not very conventional and that wouldn't, you know, work for most families. So that definitely was kind of a reason why it worked better.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense, yeah.
But my parents definitely didn't come from a sporting background.
Okay.
I mean, actually, I shouldn't say that if my parents are watching. My dad played professional rugby and was pretty good at it, but gymnastics-wise, they didn't do any gymnastics.
Yeah.
So I think it's,
completely just, left. The gymnastics came completely left field.
Yeah.
Amazing. Can you tell me a little bit, you sit in a unique position of having a brother that did gymnastics, so you have a relatively good understanding of the men's sport, how the men's sport works and some of their challenges that they face, and also a deep understanding of the women's program. From that perspective, what are your observations in terms of the big differences between the sports when it comes to the culture, the training, even the age at which you have to be competing at the highest level. What are some of those big observations and differences you see between the men's side of the sport and also the women's side of the sport?
I mean, the first obvious difference to me is that we have four apparatus, they have six. And that may not seem like a big difference to most people, but as you know, it's hard to split up your time. You need to dedicate a good part of your time to each of those apparatus. Mm-hmm. So for us, I feel like it's easier to kind of divide our time and work on all four, whereas you guys have all six.
Right, okay.
And it was probably harder to, you know, find time to work all six. And I would say age-wise, I think the stigma is kind of changing around women's gymnastics, but I would say generally speaking, women's gymnastics normally peak when they're younger. Mm-hmm. That's kind of when they, you know, hit their peak, and they're people that are going to the Olympics are going normally a little younger. You're definitely seeing some changes now. But for men's, I feel like you probably peak when you're a little older, yeah. And you know, you get a bit bigger and stronger. Whereas that's a bit different for women. So yeah, I guess.
Yeah, it seems to me like you had a very successful junior career, right? So I think you're the first British female athlete to win 5 medals at a junior European Championships, which is an amazing achievement. 3 medals at a Youth Olympic Games. It seems to me on the women's side, if you are a very successful junior, that transition into senior gymnastics is like sped up times 20 in comparison to the men. You've got more time to develop. Is that what it felt like for you when you were in that and you're living it? You know, you go from 2018 being a junior, having that success, 2019, you're a senior, 2020, the Olympics comes around, COVID happens, it gets postponed. That's such a short space of time that so much is happening. I imagine that's really hard to process that as a young person that's still having the same issues that everybody is having as a teenager and trying to develop.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I mean, it wasn't easy at all, but at the same time, everyone had to go through it. And all we've ever known as gymnasts is, you know, you just one day at a time, keep moving forward. And that's all we could really do. I just, you know, go to the gym, whether that was through COVID on Zoom or in the gym, take each day as it comes. And that's kind of exactly what I did and all I've ever known. But I definitely agree it goes very fast. And I think especially for women's artistic, junior, being in that junior age is definitely more of a kind of propeller into senior competition. And using that experience definitely is going to help you in your first senior years, as opposed to, you know, getting that experience in your senior years, you kind of go straight into it. So yeah, I would say it's pretty quick. And yeah.
What were the biggest differences, Emily, between competing as a junior international competitions and then stepping up to a senior? Was there anything that surprised you that you found very difficult initially transitioning to senior gymnastics?
I wouldn't say there's any like huge differences. Obviously in junior you only have those kind of two age groups, so everyone's very similar in age, very similar in skill level, whereas when you go to senior it's obviously 16 plus to however old you are. So there's so much more variety in age and difficulty and uniqueness. I don't know, there's so much more variety, I would say. And obviously the difficulty level just kind of jumps up to that next level. So there's not any major differences, but yeah.
Do you have the same amount of skills, Emily, in women's gymnastics when you're competing as a junior as you do as a senior?
Yeah, you have the same amount of skills. Yeah, I think you do. But obviously on vault, you don't have to do two different vaults. So okay. You can just do, like, you can do two of the same entry.
Right, okay. Yeah, because as a junior on the men's side, you compete 8 skills, and as a senior, you compete 10. So you have to add 2 extra skills in. So that maybe makes a difference in terms of that time it takes to transition into senior gymnastics that maybe you just don't have on the women's side, and you can transition a little easier. In terms of the homeschooling that you did, Emily, what was your experience of that? Because I homeschooled as well so that I could train full time. But the way I did it was probably very different to the way that you did it. Mine was, I didn't really homeschool. I just played on my PlayStation all day and then went and did my training. But from looking at the results that you got in your A-levels and then going on to college, you must have done well in your education. How did you find that balance in the education side and having the motivation to push yourself to homeschool and also train and balance those two things?
Yeah, so it definitely wasn't easy. I don't know if our schooling, online schooling system in the UK is necessarily the best one.
Okay.
I don't think it's a very common thing, whereas here it's very common. But I think for me at that point when I started homeschooling, that was when I was traveling all the time for competitions and I would have been missing so much school. So for that time, it was probably a good thing that I was homeschooling, yeah. but at the same time, it was very difficult. You know, there wasn't much help they gave you. It was kind of like, here's the book, the textbook, read it, and then complete your assignments. So we found, I actually was homeschooled with one of my teammates, Phoebe, at the time, which made it a lot easier. And we kind of sourced some like outside like tuition and stuff like that to help us. So definitely wasn't easy. And going into like GCSEs, it definitely wasn't easy, but we kind of pushed pretty hard into GCSEs, did that. And then going into A-levels, we decided to go back to school. So I only actually homeschooled for kind of 2.5 years, which wasn't too bad. And then I went back to sixth form to complete my A-levels.
When you look back now, Emily, at that time when you were homeschooling, what do you think some of the benefits were to doing that? And what do you think some of the obstacles were that maybe impacted then the next few years of your life? Do you think there were any?
I definitely think there was a lot of positives to take away from it. I mean, obviously, like I said, I was traveling a lot and it just made it so much more flexible that I could take my schoolwork wherever I was going, and kind of like the time constraints, it cut them down a lot. I kind of went from doing, I think, 10 or 11 GCSEs down to kind of 6 or 7.
Okay.
So the ones that weren't as necessary, I kind of cut back on. And it also taught me how to be self-motivated. It taught me how to kind of get up and have to choose to do that work as opposed to being told to do it. You know, going to school and sitting there and listening, you kind of had to find that motivation yourself. And going into A-levels and then onto kind of university, it definitely kind of gave me that introduction to that sort of work, which I think has benefited me in the long run.
Did you always plan to go on to further education? Because on the men's side, it's quite rare that male gymnasts choose to continue their education. It's becoming a bit more common now, but typically if you're one of those male gymnasts that's very successful as a junior, you're pretty much going full-time straight away. So was that something, was your education something that you always really put quite a high importance on?
Yeah, I think in terms of my family anyway, we've always had a big emphasis on the good balance of both.
Okay.
They were always so supportive of our sport and our gymnastics and wanted nothing but the best. But at the same time, you know, we were held to a high standard for education too.
Right.
And personally, I believe, you know, there's more to life than gymnastics, and anything can happen. There's injuries, you know, anything can happen.
Yeah.
And for me, education was really important and something that I always wanted to do. And obviously, because there's NCAA gymnastics, I knew that I could come and do further education while still doing my sport.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the best of both worlds.
There's been some rule changes recently, Emily, with kids now not being able to be taken out of school under the age of 16. I was someone, like I said, that at the age of 12, 13, I was then homeschooled for the remaining 2.5 years of secondary school. Do you think that's a positive thing in general? How do you feel about that? Because you were someone that's probably now going to be one of the last gymnasts to have been training outside of school hours, because that's just not going to be a thing moving forward. Like, how do you feel about those changes? Do you think they're a positive thing? I'd just be really interested to get your point of view on that, because you're someone, like I said, that was probably up until very recently one of the last gymnasts to have gone down that road, similar to myself back when I was at school.
I think that's a really hard question, because I would love to know how I would do if I hadn't been able to take that time off school. And I really think that it would have been very difficult to kind of fit both in, having to, you know, go to school all day. And like I said, I really value education, and I really, you know, wanted to do well in school. But at the same time, I think it would have been very hard to kind of do gymnastics without missing some time out of school.
Yeah.
I think when you're developing in those junior years, kind of like in your early teenage years, you need more hours in the gym.
Yeah.
When you get a little older, it's not, you don't need as many hours. You're kind of more maintaining. But when you're developing those skills and things like that, getting hours in the gym was quite important to me. So personally, I don't know. I think it's a good thing for education. And I was someone that was very self-motivated. So I was able to kind of do my school alongside taking time out. I don't know. I think there's positives and negatives. I'll be very interested to see kind of how people go around it.
Yeah, maybe that might translate into the career of a female gymnast being spread out a bit more, right? Because there are only going to be so many hours in the day to train now. It's not like 35 hours a week is what, like 6 days of 7 hours. To do 7 hours after a full day at school, you're going to be training from like 4 till 11 o'clock at night. That just isn't going to happen anymore. So it'll be interesting to see whether that skill development is slowed down through those rule changes, and that maybe translates into the top female gymnasts at an Olympic Games instead of maybe being between the age of 16 to 18, maybe that becomes 18 to 20. It'll be really interesting to see how that develops. You have been out in America competing in the college system, and typically you're going to be between the age of, I'd say, 18 to 22, right? So you're, in terms of gymnastics, more of a mature gymnast traditionally on the women's side. But do you feel competing out in the college system now at the age you are, because you're more developed and you've had more life experience, it's actually a real advantage then when it comes to the gymnastics training?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much you know about the NCAA system, but the gymnastics here is more about kind of the execution as opposed to the difficulty.
Okay.
So when I came here, obviously you cut back on the difficulty. The routines aren't as hard, but they're just about being, you know, so clean. And we're all scored out of a 10. So as soon as you kind of reach the difficulty that adds up to the bonus of the start value of 10, then you kind of stop there and you focus on the execution side of it. So you can be a little bit older, and it's so much easier to maintain those skills because you're not constantly building and learning new skills and things like that. You're kind of holding that difficulty and just working on the execution. So I feel like it's easier on your body and kind of mentally too. And that's why there is so many people that are able to carry on for, you know, that years, I guess.
That makes a lot of sense. Tell me a little bit then about your Olympic experience, Emily. Tokyo was obviously a crazy time. We've had quite a few of the male gymnasts that represented GB in Tokyo, and also some other athletes that were there. And they've said it was a really surreal experience being at an Olympic Games where you dream about when you're a kid and you go there and there's no crowd and your family aren't there because there's no one to watch. But you guys, I guess, having made history and won an Olympic medal, I can't imagine you look back at that experience with anything but fond memories. Maybe that's different, but yeah, I'd just like to hear about your Olympic experience. I'm sure that was something you dreamed about since you were a little girl.
Yeah, it was definitely a crazy experience. And I mean, that was my first Olympic Games, so it's hard to compare it to anything, but obviously you hear the stories, you know what goes on. I think the most disappointing part for me was the opening ceremony and the closing ceremony. Obviously with COVID and everything, we couldn't go to those, which I would have loved to have that experience. But we, at the same time, we got to do a little Team GB, kind of our own team opening, which was really cool to see. And yeah, I think it's about kind of how you make the experience. And it was pretty sad we didn't kind of get to make those relationships with other countries and other teams. But at the same time, like you said, we made history, and gymnastics-wise, we couldn't have asked for any better.
Yeah.
And going into the Olympics, we faced so many challenges and, you know, most that most people won't even know about. But we had coaching changes and, like, team, like, problems. And, yeah, so much went on. So for us to get to that point, we were just so proud to even be competing and get there. And then to come away with a medal was just so surreal. And, yes, it wasn't a conventional Olympic Games, but for us, it was still an amazing experience and so many takeaways from it.
What was it like walking into the arena for the team final and then putting your hand up for the first routine? Can you remember what those emotions were like and what it felt like?
Yeah. I very distinctly remember walking in and saying, oh, this feels like podium training. And it was a very strange feeling because you know what it's like. You kind of go into podium training and there's no people watching, but you're kind of in front of the judges practicing your routines. And that's kind of what it felt like. And I didn't know at the time if that was a good thing or a bad thing. You know that there's thousands of people watching on the TV. So you know there's people watching. You know what the competition is. And I feel like when you go up to your routine, you block all of that out anyway. I'm someone that doesn't even think about the audience, doesn't even think about who's around me, and I just do my routine. And I think that's exactly what we had to do. You kind of had to just be in your zone, be in your bubble, and only think about your gymnastics. And it definitely was a very strange feeling, kind of finishing your routine and just silence, whereas normally, you know, there'd be a little cheer or something like that. So we had to keep the energy up ourselves, but I think we made it work, so yeah.
When you approach a routine, Emily, what kind of mindset are you in? Are you someone that is doing lots of visualization? Are you trying to keep yourself calm? Do you like to be geared up? What type of mental approach do you adopt when you're about to do a routine? And is that different from apparatus to apparatus. You know, I've never competed on beam, but I imagine being on beam, you have to be incredibly confident with your own ability to be able to handle those nerves. Yeah, could you talk a little bit about that for us?
Yeah, it definitely varies slightly from event to event. Floor and vaults are the power events for me. I didn't feel like I had to be as calm. I kind of could be like moving around, you know, keeping warm, definitely visualizing in my head. But for floor and vault, I wasn't too kind of like calming myself down. I was more like jumping around, keeping myself busy. Whereas beam and bars, I definitely did a lot of visualization. Beam in particular, I would keep myself busy. I still do. I like to keep myself busy. I do lots of kind of like line routines, just like dance throughs, like visualizing my routine. And when I go up to my routine, like you said, you have to be so aggressive. You can't hold back on a piece like that. Yeah. You have to kind of go aggressive and give it your all, which is, you know, hard to do when you're under a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
But for me, I kind of, you know, take it. I've done this routine hundreds of times. I know how to do it. It's no different now. I'm kind of saluting to a judge and I just have to go up and do exactly the same as if I was just in the gym doing another repetition.
When you're doing a routine on the beam, Emily, are you able to block out the noise and the judges and what's going on? Because when I would compete on the high bar, for example, I was able to do that really, really well. But, you know, it's very difficult to pick out individual people. Whereas when you're on the beam, it's very open, right? Like you're... It's quite an intimidating place to be. Like, there's nowhere to run when you're on the beam. Are you able to block out that noise? Are you hearing things? Are you seeing judges? Are there moments where you that concentration breaks, or are you just fully focused in a tunnel vision?
Yeah, I think it definitely is a difficult one because, like you say, like on bars for me, it was very easy to do that because it's a quick routine. You're concentrated on the bars and there's no room to even look elsewhere. Whereas on the beam, you're right, it's a slower event. You kind of have that time to interact with the judges, and I've gotten a lot better. I used to kind of just look down at the beam the whole time, not bring my eyes up and kind of just get my routine done, A to B, finish. Whereas I've learned to kind of, you know, incorporate the judges and in your choreography, kind of, you know, look at them and make eye contact. And those things really do add to the artistry. So it's definitely hard to do and something that I've developed over time. But yeah, you definitely kind of have to engage the audience and the judges and things like that. Part of the floor and beam choreography is engagement. So it's hard to do, but something that you kind of develop and work on over time.
What's your favorite apparatus to train and compete, Emily?
I think this is an unpopular one, but honestly, probably beam.
Right.
I used to absolutely hate it, but I really like beam. Yeah.
I imagine if you're good on beam on the women's side, it's very much like a, if you're going into a competition and the other competitors know that you're good on beam and you're very confident, it can be very intimidating for other teams and other people, right? You quite often see in women's team competitions, it's kind of all on whether they have a good beam rotation or not. I remember a Romanian gymnast, Catalina Panor, she was so confident when she competed on beam. She was like aggressive almost. And I think I'd imagine if you were another team and you were in the same rotation, that would be quite intimidating. Do you feel that way? Do you feel like on beam, if you are confident and you can hit a routine, it really does unnerve other people and it's a real advantage?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think because it is such an intricate event, you have to be kind of perfect and you have to be aggressive. Otherwise, you know, there's no room for error. Whereas I feel like floor and vault, you can have kind of, you can be a little bit off and you can still make it work. Whereas beam, there's not much of that making it work. And I don't know if this is the same, but in like beam finals, it's kind of, it's anyone's game. It's who's good on the day, who hits on the day. And I feel like that's similar on the men's side to maybe pommel horse. Is that like the same?
Yeah.
I don't know if
potentially, no, I think you're probably right. Maybe I would actually say maybe more so on high bar than pommels. Yeah. I think the best guys on pommels, their difficulty is so much higher than everybody else's, and actually those best guys tend to go through quite often, whereas on high bar there's so much risk, particularly if they're doing four or five releases, that it is a bit more. I remember the first ever high bar final I competed in at 18. I qualified for the final in first place with some incredible gymnasts, and I was sixth up, and the first five gymnasts in the final fell, and I just went, oh, my brain was going, you could win a medal, which was the wrong thing to be doing, but I was 18, so I was naive, and I fell straight away. And the next three guys went and won the three medals. So I think high bars may be a little bit more like that. But yeah, I have kind of noticed that watching beam finals, it sometimes is who just goes through.
Yeah, definitely. you know, that's hard watching. And like you say, it impacts how you feel. And that's why for me, I try and, you know, not watch the people before me, because I don't want what they do shouldn't impact your gymnastics. It's hard to, easier to say than do, but yeah, I definitely try and not watch the people before me, so it doesn't let me kind of, it doesn't affect me.
What is the role of bravery play in, particularly in beam, when you're a young gymnast and you're growing up and you're starting to do difficult skills like flicks and somersaults on the beam? Like, that is scary, man. I've coached some young girls that are 8 or 9 years old, and they're frightened and they're scared to death of doing a flick on beam. And I'm looking at it like, well, you wouldn't catch me doing that. So I completely understand why you're feeling that. Does that fear hold back a lot of gymnasts? Have you seen that happen? And how do you overcome that fear? You know, if there's a young gymnast watching or listening to this podcast, and they're at the minute, they have a real challenge with a skill potentially on beam, how did you learn to overcome that fear? Because I'm guessing that you still feel that, right? You still have that fear. You just learn to manage that emotion.
Yeah, definitely. I think, like I said before, I love beam now. I love the piece. But when I was younger, I used to be terrified, like most people. I think when you're kind of going through those ages, I mean, it can vary, but obviously from probably 8 to kind of 12 is probably when you're going to be most terrified of beam. And I can promise, if there's any like young girls watching this, that everyone feels it. Everyone's terrified of beam. But there are definitely ways to overcome it. And like I say now, I absolutely love it. And there's definitely ways to deal with it. And I think you just have to take it slow. I mean, I've seen people, you know, stop gymnastics because they don't enjoy beam. And for me, that's so sad, because it just takes some time to overcome. And you have to build up that confidence very slowly. And it might come slower than other pieces, which is very frustrating, especially when there might be other people kind of progressing further than you. But starting on, you know, the low beam, the line on the floor, doing lots of reps on kind of like the soft, like squishy beams, those things really help your confidence. And just the feeling of doing that skill on the beam in a safe environment where, you know, if you fall onto the floor, you're not going to hurt yourself. And doing that so many times that you feel so confident to then go up on the high beam. It definitely takes some time and some confidence and some bravery. But once you kind of overcome that first initial fear of going backwards or doing that skill that you're not so confident on, you just grow and grow with confidence from that.
Did you teach yourself to visualize, Emily? Was it something that you just naturally started to do? Or was it a time where a coach or somebody said, look, you should try visualizing? I know now a lot of athletes work with sports psychologists, and you train visualization. Was it something that you just started as a young gymnast and has carried through your career? Or was it something that you sat down and decided, right, I need to start trying to do visualization?
Yeah, I think when I was younger, I obviously was told, oh, we're going to do our visualization routines. Like, so I got told to kind of, you know, go over, like, do a visualized routine, close your eyes, do your arm movements, so if you're a beam dance or your floor dance, something like that. And when I was younger, I found this really hard. I don't know if that was just me, but I found it really hard to close my eyes and visualize myself doing a routine. And it was something that I never really enjoyed. I didn't really understand when I was younger the point of it. And now I love this tool. I use it all the time. I love to visualize. And I think the turning point for me was when I was injured and I started visualizing because I couldn't do the routines because I was hurt. Yeah. And I think doing visualization every single day, I came back so much faster. And I know it sounds crazy, but it's almost like doing a visualization of a routine is like another rep. Yeah. You know, it's like another rep of routine. It's just increasing your confidence and your muscle memory. And although you're not physically doing it, I truly believe that it helps in your confidence and your ability to do it, because you're telling yourself over and over that you can do it and that you're going to do it successfully. And yeah, it's a tool that I use all the time now, especially when you get a little older and you can't do as many repetitions as when you're younger. Visualization is such a powerful tool.
If you were going to do a routine, let's say you were competing this weekend in a college competition, Emily, and you were doing, let's say, a vault, when you're visualizing that in the lead up to the competition or before the routine, are you seeing it from a first person's point of view? So is it you seeing the vault with your eyes when you close your eyes, or are you watching it as if a judge would or somebody on TV?
Personally, I do it that I'm watching myself, like maybe from a judge or a coach's perspective. But yeah, I'm watching myself do the skill as opposed to kind of feeling it. And I know everyone does it differently, but that's how I prefer to.
Is there a reason why you're doing that, Emily? Is it just something that you naturally did from the get-go? You started visualizing in that way? Do you like to see the whole skill and technically break it down? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's more of a natural thing of what you naturally go to. But for me, at the same time, I would like to visualize kind of in the place where I wanted to grow my confidence in. So say I've been to the British, you know, year after year, and say the British was coming up and I wanted to visualize myself in the Echo Arena, M&S Bank Arena, visualizing myself do that routine in the arena. So kind of like in the place where I, you know, knew I was going to be, as opposed to kind of in my training gym, because what you see when you're doing the routine and what's around you definitely impacts you. Right. And for me, that helped kind of, visualize it before I went there.
So you're even before the competition and the event, you're visualizing the arena you're going to be competing in, the apparatus it's going to be in. And then, so I imagine, let's say it's an arena you've not competed in before. Once you've been in there to do podium and you know what it looks like, are you then visualizing yourself in that gym doing the routine?
Yeah, definitely. I think, like you said, if you haven't been there, it's hard to do that. But as soon as I would get to the arena after that, I would kind of imagine myself in the arena. Yeah.
Oh, amazing. I think that's a really cool insight, because we don't often go into the actual, people talk about visualization, but we don't talk about like the intricacies of it and what you are actually seeing. And I think for young gymnasts, they hear visualization, but nobody's told them what to do or how it works. So it's really cool to hear that, you know, there are those two different ways of doing it, whether it's kind of your first person view or looking at, I was the same. I would like to watch it as if I was seeing it on a TV screen or a judge would be watching it. So I could almost, I wanted it to look the way I wanted it to, if that made sense.
So
it's really cool to hear that. It's a great insight. Thank you. In terms of the Olympic Games then and winning an Olympic medal, how old were you when you won that medal, Emily?
I think I was 18.
So at 18, you win an Olympic medal, which is a huge thing. How did that then change? Did it change your life? Did it impact your life? Were there differences? Did you then get more funding, sponsorship? How did that change things coming back with an Olympic medal? You know, the first medal in 93 years, that's an incredible achievement. I know myself after London 2012, you know, that was a huge event and certainly things did change. And I think at the time, I was maybe a little bit naive, but when I look back now, the significance of that was huge for my life. You know, it still plays a role. I still go into schools with my Olympic medal. I still get paid because I'm an Olympic medalist to do things because of that. It's a huge achievement. Have you realized that in time?
I think I probably have a different perspective because I don't think I've had like the normal journey post-Olympics.
Right.
So we competed in July, early August, I believe. I don't quite remember the time frame. And that year I actually came out to Utah to start my collegiate career. And that was mid to end of August. So from the time I came home from the Olympics, I had a month, maybe less than a month, kind of take all of that in while I was at home before coming out to America. So I had no time at all to kind of take in all the things that, you know, all the changes, all the people that want to sponsor you, things like that. So it was very different. And then obviously when I came over to America, I had lots of people kind of reaching out to do sponsorships or deals and things like that. And I'm not sure how much you're aware of it, but I'm on a student visa over here. And when you're on a student visa, you actually can't earn any money in this country. Okay. So I wasn't able to do any sponsorship deals. I wasn't allowed to make any money from any work, which was very kind of weird because obviously you're coming off the back of an Olympic medal. You're kind of in the media, people want to reach out to you. And I kind of had to turn down a lot of things, which was pretty hard at the time. But the sacrifice of kind of getting an education and being able to carry on gymnastics was kind of outweighed that for me.
Am I right in thinking that that is changing? Emily, is that unique to student athletes on a visa? Because from what I understand, the college system is changing so people can be paid. Am I right? Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, so there used to be, I'm not sure what it was called, but student athletes that were competing in the NCAA weren't allowed to make any money. And I think it was just before I went out, maybe a year or two before I came out here, the rules actually changed and they said, okay, you're allowed to make money in college now. And that was, you know, a game changer. But obviously for international students, like I said, on a student visa, that still didn't change anything for us because that's more to do with kind of the US immigration as opposed to the NCAA rules.
And
so
I'm still
not able to make any money. But
really? Still now? Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So tell me a little bit then about you go out to college. What's that process like? I know that is a path that's been walked before by quite a few female gymnasts from the UK. I know, so from my time, Marissa King went out there, then Ruby Straw, who was at your gym, am I right?
Ruby Howard.
Yeah, not Ruby Straw. She was at NOS. So Ruby Howard went out and she competed in the college system. Did you speak to anybody before going out? Was that somebody approached you? How does that work?
Yeah, so when I made that move to the academy when I was kind of 13, 14, one of the big reasons was because they were known to sending some of their gymnasts off to the US.
Okay.
And because that was quite a new thing in the US, like you said, there were some people that had done it, but not many people. And I think there was maybe 4 or 5 from the academy that had gone over to the US.
Oh, wow.
Or had a scholarship to come over. And that was something I was so interested in. So I went over and Liz Kincaid, my coach, I'm sure you know her. She had some great connections over here in the US and she was able to kind of reach out and communicate with some coaches and show you the way on how to do it because she had been successful in getting some of her other gymnasts over here.
Okay.
And that was a big part of why I moved there and she helped me, you know, greatly trying to get over here.
What was like your initial experience when you first got out there to America? Obviously, you're going to a new country, you're away from your family. But in terms of the actual gymnastics, what was that? Was there a real difference in the environment in the college system compared to what you'd been used to competing in the elite environment back in the UK?
It was definitely very different. Obviously, it's the same sport. It's always gymnastics. So there was definitely some things that stayed the same. But in terms of kind of the team aspect of it was very different to me. I think In the UK, obviously, we're a smaller country, so we have less gymnasts. And I would train with probably kind of, you know, 2 to 4 of the gymnasts that were the same age as me at my club. And we were all kind of at slightly different levels, not all competing in the same competitions and things like that. Whereas here, it's like 14, 15 girls, all of similar ages, working towards the same competition, doing similar skills.
Okay.
So it's just like that different level of kind of relationship, and you get to train with each other every single day. You know, you live with each other. I live with, you know, 3 other teammates, and you just have that different connection. And yeah, it's a really cool thing to be able to kind of know what each other are going through at the same stage of your life. And yeah, be able to relate to that.
Can you tell me a little bit, Emily, when you look at the women's NCAA program, that as a product is something where you are getting at times tens of thousands of people watching gymnastics competitions. That is not something that translates internationally to global events, where it's the Olympic Games, World Championships, European Championships, Commonwealth Games. What is it about that college product in America on the women's side that you think sells so well that people buy into and the rest of the gymnastic community just can't get a hold of? Because it's pretty special, right? When you're going out there and it's so popular. What do you think that is? What is it, that thing that's missing? There's someone that's competed in it.
I think there's several different reasons.
Okay.
I mean, for starters, like I said previously, it's a little bit of a lower difficulty than elite gymnastics. So you have so many more people in the sport. So you're able to kind of have, I mean, there's like maybe 80 teams across the country with, you know, 15 girls, and you would never be able to have that in the UK. So that competitive edge obviously is a big factor. And the fact that we have seasons, so you're competing every single weekend for 13 weeks in a row. So the people watching, they have a connection to the gymnasts. They see them every single week. They see how they progress and they can kind of follow their journey a bit easier.
Okay.
Whereas in elite gymnastics, you maybe compete 3 or 4 times at big competitions a year, maybe more. It's harder to kind of follow their journey and follow their progress and see them every single weekend. And I think another big factor to it is that it's easier to understand. I think gymnastics is a very difficult sport to kind of just jump in and understand exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
I think in elite gymnastics, there's so much to take in. There's the difficulty, the execution, and people don't know what skills are cool. They don't know what they're worth, things like that. Whereas in collegiate gymnastics, pretty much everyone starts from around a 10. And so you can see, you know, you can easily see when there's a deduction there, there's a deduction there. And the audience can kind of be involved in that. They
okay.
can see when it's a really good routine. They can see when it's not so good routine. And I think to the general public and someone that's never seen gymnastics, it's easier to understand. That's why it has so much more of a following here.
Do you think it also plays a role that the American women have been so successful over the last 10, 15 years in terms of competing internationally as well as the US team?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I think, like I said, again, they just have so many more people in this country. And I think that's, you know, a big factor that's hard to overlook. And because there are so many people, it's so much more competitive here. They have so many more gyms at that higher level, and they're able to produce so many more people at that elite level. So they're constantly just competing against each other to make each other better. Yeah, it's kind of hard to beat. They've historically been very competitive. And yeah, I think it's something that a lot of other countries kind of look into and try and copy some skills and things from here. So yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that decision to come back to the UK at the start of the year, Emily, and compete at the English Championships and the British Championships. How did you find that experience? Was it difficult to go from doing those easier routines in college gymnastics back to trying to push that difficulty into your routines?
Yeah, I mean, after Tokyo, everyone asked me, oh, are you going to go back and try for Paris? And my answer was always no. Like, I feel completely satisfied with my Olympic experience. Like, yes, it was during COVID, but I'm at college now. I feel like I'm in a different chapter of my life. So I always said no. And then end of last year, when Worlds was going on, I watched Worlds and I almost felt a sense of like, oh, I kind of miss it. I would love to be doing that again. And obviously there were some injuries, and you never wish injuries upon anyone, but it is the sport of gymnastics and it happens. And that's, you know, the reality of it. So it was some injuries, and I kind of saw that opportunity to maybe, you know, have an opportunity to try again. And I'm someone that always loves a challenge and loves to push myself. So I, you know, got back in the gym and I said, after I finish my collegiate like assignments and what we have to do for the day, if I get through them really quickly, can I try some other skills? And that's what it started off as. Okay. As soon as I would get through my program of skills really quickly, so that I could move on and try some of my other skills again. And considering I hadn't done them in kind of, you know, 3 years, I got them back decently quickly, and I kind of started building from there, putting skills together, building routines. And then, you know, obviously I started thinking about more about the competitions, the English and the British. And yeah, it was a pretty difficult process balancing both, especially because we started competing every single weekend.
Yeah.
But I think I made, you know, the best of it, and I managed to get back in time and do pretty well at the English and British.
What was the communication like, Emily, between yourself and then the program back home? Had you been part of the squad for the last 2-3 years? How did that work?
Yeah, so obviously I was a part of British Gymnastics when I left, and then after sort of 6 months to a year, I think, I kind of said, look, I'm not really planning on coming back. Like, I'm not going to be part of the squad anymore, which was totally fine. So when I obviously reached back out, I knew that I'd only be coming back for kind of less than a year. So there was no kind of, I want to be back on the squad. It was kind of like, you know, I'd love to come back and do these competitions and see where it leads me kind of thing. And they, you know, were super supportive and kind of gave me some guidelines on what, you know, I need to do and things like that. Yeah, kind of just went from there.
Yeah. And how were the competitions? How did they go for you? Was it good to be competing back in the at the British in Liverpool?
Yeah, it was a very strange experience, especially because I hadn't imagined myself going back there.
Yeah.
And teammates and people that I knew, obviously, I hadn't seen in 3 years. So it was so nice to see everyone again and connect with people. And considering I've been balancing both at NCAA and preparing for those competitions,
yeah,
I think I did pretty well. I mean, I came third all around at the English and fourth all around at the British, which was pretty good. I was pretty pleased with my performance, and yeah, it was great to see everyone again and compete with my twin, Finley. So that was pretty cool.
What led then, Emily, to the decision where you decided, that's it, I'm going to retire from elite gymnastics? I know that originally a second Olympic Games wasn't in your mind, but obviously the way things have planned out and the recent injuries again to the women's team, I imagine you would have been in with a shot at an Olympic Games, right, and a spot. Did a phone call take place where somebody said, look, we might need you for these next competitions? Or did you make your decision before a phone call like that happened? Because obviously there's been a big injury that's taken place in the last couple of weeks. I'm just really interested into, you know, you're someone that's still very young. That's a really big decision to decide just in the build-up to an Olympic Games, when there's a real good shot potentially of you being able to be on the team, that you decide to walk away from that. Seems like somebody that's got a very mature head on their shoulders.
Yeah, I mean, I know it seems like a crazy decision to make from someone on the outside, probably looking in as like, why would you do that? So close to the Olympics and, you know, with this opportunity, why would you just walk away? And I completely understand that point of view. But for me, you know, there was so much more that went on in that decision. And when I started this whole journey and process of coming back to Elite, the whole time it was because I didn't want to regret not going for it. I didn't want to regret looking back and saying I should have tried and I should have tried again. I never wanted that. So I wanted to, you know, I love the sport and I wanted to see if I could do it and challenge myself. And that's exactly what I did. I was, you know, very proud of my performance of coming back to Elite in the English and British Championships. And, you know, I don't think I could have done much better for that stage of where I was at. But at the same time, I think going back and competing in Elite Gymnastics, it wasn't the same to me. I didn't love it as much as I, you know, had hoped to. Yeah. And there was a lot of other challenges throughout the way and, you know, not going to go into all, but yeah, just the challenge of balancing both NCAA and Elite Gymnastics and trying to get into those competitions and get some international kind of competition too. It was just, yeah, there was a lot going on and my heart just kind of wasn't really in it anymore. And all along I said I just wanted to give it a go, and if it didn't work out, it didn't work out. It's not going to be the end of the world. I still have, you know, another year of gymnastics here. And for me at this point, I actually had made the decision that I didn't want to carry on before, you know, some other big injuries.
Okay.
And you know, I had made that clear to British Gymnastics, like, look, thank you for everything, but I'm, you know, this is the end of the journey for me. And even after some of those injuries, I definitely considered it again. I, you know, kind of was considering to go back on it. But I made those decisions for myself and not because of, you know, any injury or anyone else. And ultimately I wanted to stick to that decision because that's what I wanted for myself, not because of what, you know, anyone else was doing. So it was definitely a big decision and a lot went into it. I went back and forth a lot, but that's kind of how it went.
You spoke a little bit about, you know, when the post where you announced that you're retiring from Elite Gymnastics, you mentioned that the environment out in the college system is very supportive and encouraging. Just tell us what that looks like, Emily. I don't want you to tell me the opposite of that and potentially what the differences in the Elite Gymnastics environment, but tell me what a positive environment looks like. I think for a lot of particularly parents of young girls that are in the sport over the last few years, there's been a lot in the media and it can be quite scary, right? And I've been worried that that will translate to more kids not getting into gymnastics. So if you are a parent and you want to get your daughter into gymnastics, what is a positive environment that they should be looking out for? Because I often say to parents, look, when you're picking a gym club, vet the gym club like you would a school. Go in, see if all the kids are happy and they're smiling, like talk to the other parents and the coaches, see what the culture's like. What is that super positive environment you've been experienced in America, and what would that look like, and how would you describe that to a parent that might be listening to the podcast?
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, gymnastics is a tough sport. For anyone listening, I think it's one of the hardest sports out there, and you're not going to get through it without some hard times. So yeah, there definitely are some hard times and you have to push. You have to, you know, put work in and it's hard work. But at the same time, I truly believe you can have fun and you can love the sport throughout that. And for me, like I said before, there's 14, 15 of us girls and we're all on the same page. We're working towards one common goal. And that can be between coach and gymnast working towards the same goal and just having the same expectations kind of your training and your competition and what your goals are, what your aims are for the future, kind of things like that, and setting them out. And for me, I would say communication is a big one of those things. And maybe because I'm a little bit older now, maybe I have that better relationship. And I've always been someone that's had a good relationship with my coaches and been very grateful for that. And I think communication is a big thing. So I would say having good communication is, you know, a really positive thing. Making sure you're on the same page with goals is another thing. And yeah, just making it fun. Like you can put work in and also make it fun at the same time. You know, it doesn't have to be miserable. It's an amazing sport. I love the sport and you can, you know, make it exciting and fun and keep pushing for new goals every single day. And yeah, I guess that's what a positive environment looks like to me. Yeah.
Amazing. I think that's great advice. Just to finish off, Emily, can you tell me, I know around that Tokyo 2020 time and 2021 when you competed at the Olympic Games, there was a lot going on, right? And there was lots of politics and there was all sorts within the team and the setup. How difficult is it to ignore that external noise? And what advice would you give a young athlete that is potentially competing at a very high level and there's all sorts of stuff going on here? What advice would you give to them to ignore that and focus on just their performance? Because that's the only thing that you can control ultimately, right? And I think now with social media, it's very, very difficult for a young person to ignore everything, notifications, comments, everything that's coming in, you're going to see it, right? It's, you know, I'd be sitting here and I'd be lying if I say that I don't sometimes go and check comments on certain things. I think it's just natural human behavior. But what advice would you give to a young athlete in terms of ignoring that external noise and that pressure and just focusing on the job that they've got to do?
Yeah, that is, you know, such a major part of our daily life in, you know, everything we do. Social media, it impacts, you know, what people say to you, what you think about yourself. And it can be a really positive thing. It can also be a majorly negative thing. And for me, I've definitely found that. I've been through both sides of it. I know what it feels like. And for me, I would say the only person that knows the truth is you. The only person that knows your journey is you. And it doesn't really matter what anyone else thinks. You know, the people that are really close to you know you for who you are, and they're the only people that really matter. I mean, for me, like what my family thinks and my really close friends, they're the only people that matter to me. And if they know who I am and what I have been through, then it doesn't matter what anyone else is saying online, because they don't know you. They don't know everything about you. You know, maybe they're commenting on one aspect of your life or one aspect of who you are, and they don't know the full story. They don't know the truth. And I think it's very easy to let those things get to you. But in reality, you know, what they say doesn't matter, and they don't know you. And the people close to you and who truly know you are the only ones that matter. So whenever you find yourself caught up in social media, I always say just go back to the people who know you and care about you. And they, they're the ones that matter.
Do you have any tips or tricks, Emily, for anybody out there that struggles with that? Like a young gymnast that's maybe competing at their first major championships, was there anything that you would do throughout your career and you have done? Would you ever turn off notifications or delete apps or block comment? Is there anything like that that, you know, you found really helps just ignore that external noise?
Yeah. I mean, for me, Twitter has always been the biggest no for me. It's just one of those ones where there's no face to the name. Anyone can say whatever they want, and it can be hurtful. It can be really hurtful. And I, especially in collegiate gymnastics, people always want to put in their opinion. And we actually went on like a Twitter strike this season. So I deleted Twitter. I haven't had Twitter for, I mean, over 6 months.
Okay.
And it's helped so much because you don't see it and you don't think about it. So I would say if you can, just delete it. Social media isn't that important. You know, you can still love life without social media. And, you know, I love Instagram and other forms of social media, and I still use it. But like you say, there's so many useful tools like blocking comments or, you know, not checking it on days of competitions, because you just don't want to let it affect you.
Yeah, amazing. Emily, thank you very much. We've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I wish you all the best. Have you got any competitions left in the college season, or is it finished now?
No, we just finished national championships in April, so we're not going again till January.
Oh, amazing. Are you going to be coming home to the UK for the summer to visit home, or are you going to be staying out in America?
I think I'll be staying out here, but we'll see what happens.
Oh, amazing. Have you got any hopes and plans for the next year? I know you've got your final year of college. What are your plans and your hopes for the next year and then into the future once you step away from college?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to make the most of my last year competing and, you know, making sure I really just enjoy that last year of gymnastics. I think it's quite a rare thing to know that it's your last year of gymnastics without just kind of deciding in the moment. So I'm just going to take it all in. And obviously after that, I have to go into the real world. So I'm going to be looking for jobs and things like that. And yeah, becoming a true adult.
Amazing. Well, your experiences in gymnastics, Emily, will massively help you once you get into adult life and real life. I promise you that. You've had an amazing career. All the best for the future. And thank you for coming on the podcast. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.